"Pull away!"
he yelled at Adolin, then began to back toward the army proper. The youth cursed, but did as ordered. Dalinar and Adolin retreated back behind the front line of defense. Dalinar pulled off his cracked helm, panting. He'd been fighting non-stop long enough to get winded, despite his shard plate. He let one of the guardsmen hand him a water skin, and Adolin did the same. Dalinar squirted the warm water into his mouth and across his face. It had the metallic taste of storm water. Adolin lowered his water skin, swishing the water in his mouth. He met Dalinar's eyes, his face haunted and grim. He knew. Just as Dalinar did. Just as the men likely did. There would be no surviving this battle. The Parshendi left no survivors. Dalinar braced himself, waiting for further accusations from Adolin. The boy had been right all along, and whatever the visions were, they had misled Dalinar in at least one respect. Trusting Satius had brought them to doom. Men died just a short distance away, screaming and cursing. Dalinar longed to fight, but he needed to rest himself. Losing a shardbearer because of fatigue would not serve his men.
"Well," Dalinar demanded of Adolin, "say it. I've led us to destruction."
This is my fault," Dalinar said. "I should never have risked our house for those foolish dreams."
"No," Adolin said. He sounded surprised at himself for saying it.
"No, father. It's not your fault."
Dalinar stared at his son. That was not what he'd expected to hear.
"What would you have done differently?" Adolin asked. "Would you stop trying to make something better of Alethkar? Would you become like Satius and the others?"
"No.
I wouldn't have you become that man, father, regardless of what it would gain us. I wish to the heralds that we hadn't let Satius trick us into this, but I will not blame you for his deceit."
Adolin reached over, gripping Dalinar's plate-covered arm.
"You are right to follow the codes. You were right to try to unite Alethkar. And I was a fool for fighting you on it every step along the path. Perhaps if I hadn't spent so much time distracting you, we would have seen this day coming."
Dalinar blinked, dumbfounded. This was Adolin speaking those words? What had changed in the boy? And why did he speak these words now, at the dawn of Dalinar's greatest failure? And yet, as the words hung in the air, Dalinar felt his guilt evaporating, blown away by the screams of the dying. It was a selfish emotion. Would he have had himself change? Yes, he could have been more cautious. He could have been warier of Satius. But would he have given up on the codes? Would he have become the same pitiless killer he'd been as a youth? No. Did it matter that the visions had been wrong about Satius? Was he ashamed of the man that they and the readings from the book had made him become? The final piece fell into place inside of him, the final cornerstone, and he found that he was no longer worried. The confusion was gone. He knew what to do at long last. No more questions, no more uncertainty. He reached up, gripping Adolin's arm.
"Thank you."
Adolin nodded curtly. He was still angry, Dalinar could see, but he chose to follow Dalinar, and part of following a leader was supporting him even when the battle turned against them. Then they released one another, and Dalinar turned to the soldiers around them.
"It is time for us to fight," he said, voice growing louder. "And we do so not because we seek the glory of men, but because the other options are worse. We follow the codes not because they bring gain, but because we loathe the people we would otherwise become. We stand here on this battlefield alone because of who we are."
The members of the Cobalt Guard standing in a ring began to turn, one at a time, looking toward him. Beyond them, reserve soldiers, light-eyed and dark, gathered closer, eyes terrified, but faces resolute.
"Death is the end of all men," Dalinar bellowed. "What is the measure of him once he is gone?
the wealth he accumulated and left for his heirs to squabble over, the glory he obtained only to be passed on to those who slew him, the lofty positions he held through happenstance? No. We fight here because we understand. The end is the same. It is the path that separates men. When we taste that end, we will do so with our heads held high, eyes to the sun.
He held out a hand, summoning Oathbringer.
I am not ashamed of what I have become, he shouted, and found it to be true.
It felt so strange to be free of guilt.
Other men may debase themselves to destroy me. Let them have their glory, for I will retain mine.
The shard blade formed, dropping into his hand. The men did not cheer, but they did stand taller, straight-backed. A little of the terror retreated. Adolin shoved his helm on, his own blade appearing in his hand, coated in condensation. He nodded. Together they charged back into the battle.
And so I die, Dalinar thought, crashing into the Parshendi ranks.
There he found peace. An unexpected emotion on the field of battle, but all the more welcome for that. He did, however, discover one regret. He was leaving poor Renarin as Colin High Prince, in over his head and surrounded by enemies grown fat on the flesh of his father and brother.
I never did deliver that shard plate I promised him, Dalinar thought. He will have to make his way without it. Honor of our ancestors protect you, son. Stay strong, and learn wisdom more quickly than your father did. Farewell.
Sixty-seven. Words.
Let me no longer hurt. Let me no longer weep. Dagonarthus, the Black Fisher holds my sorrow and consumes it.
Tanatesak, 1173, 28 seconds pre-death. A dark-eyed female street juggler. Note similarity to sample 1172-89. Bridge 4 lagged behind the rest of the army. With two wounded and four men needed to carry them, the bridge weighed them down. Fortunately, Sadeus had brought all 40 bridge crews on this run, including 8 to lend to Dalinar. That meant the army didn't need to wait for Kaladin's team in order to cross. Exhaustion saturated Kaladin, and the bridge on his shoulders seemed made of stone. He hadn't felt so tired since his first days as a bridgeman. Syl hovered in front of him, watching with concern as he marched at the head of his men, sweat drenching the sides of his face, struggling over the uneven ground of the plateau. Ahead, the last of Sadeus's army was bunched along the chasm, crossing. The staging plateau was nearly empty. The sheer, awful audacity of what Sadeus had done twisted at Kaladin's insides. He thought what had been done to him had been horrible. But here, Sadeus callously condemned thousands of men, light-eyed and dark. Supposed allies. That betrayal seemed to weigh as heavy on Kaladin as the bridge itself. It pressed on him, made him gasp for breath. Was there no hope for men? They killed those they should have loved. What good was it to fight? What good was it to win, if there was no difference between ally and enemy? What was victory? Meaningless. What did the deaths of Kaladin's friends and colleagues mean? Nothing. The entire world was a pustule, sickeningly green and infested with corruption. Numb, Kaladin and the others reached the chasm, though they were too late to help with the transfer. The men he'd sent ahead were there, Teft looking grim, Scar leaning on a spear to support his wounded leg. A small group of dead spearmen lay nearby. Sadeus's soldiers retrieved their wounded when possible, but some died as they were helped along. They'd abandoned some of those here. Sadeus was obviously in a hurry to leave the scene. The dead had been left with their equipment. Scar had probably gotten his crutch there. Some poor bridge crew would have to cross all the way back here at a later date to salvage from these and from Dalinar's fallen. They set their bridge down, and Kaladin wiped his brow.
Don't place the bridge across the chasm, he told the men. We'll wait until the last of the soldiers have crossed, then carry it over on one of the other bridges.
Matal eyed Kaladin and his team, but didn't order them to set their bridge. He realized that by the time they got into position, they'd have to pull it up again.
Isn't that a sight? Moash said, stepping up beside Kaladin, looking back.
Kaladin turned. The tower rose behind them, slope pointed toward them. Colin's army was a circle of blue, trapped in the middle of the slope after trying to push down and get to Satius before he left. The Parshendi were a dark swarm with specks of red from their marbled skins. They pressed at the Alethi ring, compressing it.
Such a shame, Drahi said from beside their bridge, sitting on its lip. Makes me sick.
Other bridgemen nodded, and Kaladin was surprised to see the concern in their faces. Rock and Teft joined Kaladin and Moash, all wearing their Parshendi carapace armor. He was glad they'd left Shen back in the camp. He'd have been catatonic at the sight of it all. Teft cradled his wounded arm. Rock raised a hand to shade his eyes and shook his head, looking eastward.
"'Is a shame. A shame to Satius. A shame to us.'
"'Bridge four,' Matal called. "'Come on!'
Matal was waving for them to cross Bridge Six's bridge and leave the staging plateau. An idea came to Kaladin suddenly, a fantastic idea, like a blooming rock bud in his mind.
"'We'll follow with our own bridge, Matal,' Kaladin called. "'We only just got to the chasm. We need to sit for a few minutes.'
"'Cross now!' Matal yelled.
"'We'll just fall further behind,' Kaladin retorted. "'You want to explain to Satius why he has to hold the entire army for one miserable bridge crew? "'We've got our bridge. Let my men rest. We'll catch up to you later.'
"'And if those savages come after you?'
Matal demanded. Kaladin shrugged. Matal blinked, then seemed to realize how badly he wanted that to happen.
"'Suit yourself,'
he called, rushing across Bridge Six as the other bridges were pulled up. In seconds, Kaladin's team was alone beside the chasm, the army retreating westward. Kaladin smiled broadly.
"'I can't believe it. After all that worrying?'
"'Men, we're free!'
The others turned to him, confused.
"'We'll follow in a short while,' Kaladin said eagerly. "'And Matal will assume we're coming. "'We'll fall farther and farther behind the army until we're out of sight. "'Then we'll turn north, use the bridge to cross the plains. "'We can escape northward, and everyone will just assume "'the Parshendi caught us and slaughtered us.'
"'The other bridgemen regarded him with wide eyes.
"'Supplies,' Teft said.
"'We have these spheres,' Kaladin said, pulling out his pouch. "'A wealth of them, right here. "'We can take the armor and weapons from the dead over there "'and use those to defend ourselves from bandits. "'It will be hard, but we won't be chased.'
"'The men were starting to grow excited. "'However, something gave Kaladin pause. "'What of the wounded bridgemen back in the camp?'
"'I'll have to stay behind,' Kaladin said.
"'What?'
Moash demanded.
"'Someone will need to,' Kaladin said. "'For the good of our wounded in our camp. "'We can't abandon them. "'And if I stay behind, I can support the story. "'Wound me and leave me on one of the plateaus. "'Satius is sure to send scavengers back. "'I'll tell them my crew was hunted down in retribution "'for desecrating the Parshendi corpses, "'our bridge tossed into the chasm. "'They'll believe it. "'They've seen how the Parshendi hate us.'
The crew was all standing now, shooting glances at one another. Uncomfortable glances.
"'We're not leaving without you,'
Sigzil said. Many of the others nodded.
"'I'll follow,' Kaladin said. "'We can't leave those men behind.'
"'Kaladin, lad,'
Teft began.
"'We can talk about me later,' Kaladin interrupted. "'Maybe I'll go with you, then sneak back into camp later to rescue the wounded.' For now, go salvage from those bodies.
They hesitated.
It's an order, men.
They moved, offering no further complaint, rushing to pilfer from the corpses Sadeus had abandoned. That left Kaladin alone beside the bridge. He was still unsettled. It wasn't just the wounded back in camp. What was it then? This was a fantastic opportunity, the type he'd have practically killed to get during his years as a slave. The chance to vanish, presumed dead? The bridgemen wouldn't have to fight. They were free. Why then was he so anxious? Kaladin turned to survey his men, and was shocked to see someone standing beside him. A woman of translucent white light. It was Syl, as he'd never seen her before. The size of a regular person, hands clasped in front of her, hair and dress streaming to the side in the wind. He'd had no idea she could make herself so large. She stared eastward, her expression horrified, eyes wide and sorrowful. It was the face of a child watching a brutal murder that stole her innocence. Kaladin turned and slowly looked in the direction she was staring. Toward the tower. Toward Dalinar Kholin's desperate army. The sight of them twisted his heart. They fought so hopelessly. Surrounded. Abandoned. Left alone to die. We have a bridge, Kaladin realized. If we could get it set. Most of the Parshendi were focused on the Alethi army, with only a token reserve force down at the base near the chasm. It was a small enough group that perhaps the bridgemen could contain them. But no, that was idiocy. There were thousands of Parshendi soldiers blocking Kholin's path to the chasm. And how had the bridgemen set their bridge, with no archers to support them? Several of the bridgemen returned from their quick scavenge. Rock joined Kaladin, staring eastward, expression becoming grim.
This thing is terrible, he said. Can we not do something to help?
Kaladin shook his head. It would be suicide, Rock. We'd have to run a full assault without any army to support us.
Couldn't we just go back a little of the way? Scar asked. Wait to see if Kholin can cut his way down to us? If he does, then we could set our bridge.
No, Kaladin said. If we stayed out of range, Kholin would assume us to be scouts left by Sadeus. We'd have to charge the chasm. Otherwise he'd never come down to meet us. That made the bridgeman pale. Besides, Kaladin added, if we did somehow save some of those men, they'd talk, and Sadeus would know we still live. He'd hunt us down and kill us. By going back, we'd throw away our chance at freedom. The other bridgeman nodded at that. The rest had gathered, carrying weapons. It was time to go. Kaladin tried to squish the feeling of despair inside of him. This Dalinar Kholin was probably just like the others. Like Rishon, like Sadeus, like any number of other light eyes. Pretending virtue, but corrupted inside. But he has thousands of dark-eyed soldiers with him, a part of him thought. Men who don't deserve this terrible fate. Men like my old spear crew.
We owe them nothing, Kaladin whispered.
He thought he could see Dalinar Kholin's banner, flying blue at the front of his army.
You got them into this, Kholin. I won't let my men die for you.
He turned his back on the tower. Syl still stood beside him, facing eastward. It made his very soul twist in knots to see that look of despair on her face.
Are wind spren attracted to wind? She asked softly. Or do they make it?
I don't know, Kaladin said. Does it matter?
Perhaps not. You see, I've remembered what kind of spren I am.
Is this the time for it, Syl?
I bind things, Kaladin, she said,
turning and meeting his eyes.
I am honor spren. spirit of oaths, of promises, and of nobility.
Kaladin could faintly hear the sounds of the battle. Or was that just his mind, searching for something he knew to be there? Could he hear the men dying? Could he see the soldiers running away, scattering, leaving their warlord alone? Everyone else fleeing, Kaladin kneeling over Dalet's body, a yellow and green banner flying alone on the field.
"I've been here before,"
Kaladin bellowed, turning back toward that blue banner. Dalinar always fought at the front.
"What happened last time?"
Kaladin yelled.
"I've learned. I won't be a fool again."
It seemed to crush him. Sadeus's betrayal, his exhaustion, the deaths of so many. He was there again for a moment, kneeling in Amaram's mobile headquarters, watching the last of his friends being slaughtered, too weak and hurt to save them. He raised a trembling hand to his head, feeling the brand there, wet with sweat.
"I owe you nothing, Colin."
And his father's voice seemed to whisper a reply. "Somebody has to start, son. Somebody has to step forward and do what is right. Because it is right. If nobody starts, then others cannot follow." Dalinar had come to help Kaladin's men, attacking those archers and saving Bridge Four. "The Light Eyes don't care about life," Lirin had said. "So I must. So we must. So you must." Life before death.
"I failed so often. I've been knocked to the ground and trod upon."
Strength before weakness.
"This would be death I did my friends to."
Journey before destination.
Death. And what is right.
"We have to go back," Kaladin said softly.
"Stormit, we have to go back."
He turned to the members of Bridge Four. One by one, they nodded. Men who had been the dregs of the army just months before, men who had once cared for nothing but their own skins, took deep breaths, tossed away thoughts for their own safety, and nodded. They would follow him. Kaladin looked up and sucked in a deep breath. Stormlight rushed into him like a wave, as if he'd put his lips up to a high storm and drawn it into himself.
"Bridge up,"
he commanded. The members of Bridge Four cheered their agreement, grabbing their bridge and hoisting it high. Kaladin pulled on a shield, grabbing the straps in his hand. Then he turned, raising it high. With a shout, he led his men in a charge back toward that abandoned blue banner. Dalinar's plate leaked stormlight from dozens of small breaks. No major piece had escaped. Light rose above him like steam from a cauldron, lingering as stormlight did, slowly diffusing. The sun beat down upon him, baking him as he fought. He was so tired. It hadn't been long since Sadeus's betrayal, not as time was counted in battles, but Dalinar had pushed himself hard, staying at the very front, fighting side by side with Adolin. His plate had lost much stormlight. It was growing heavier and lent him less power with each swing. Soon it would weigh him down, slowing him so the Parshendi could swarm over him. He'd killed many of them. So many. A frightening number. And he did it without the thrill. He was hollow inside. Better that than pleasure. He hadn't killed nearly enough of them. They focused on Dalinar and Adolin. With shardbearers on the front line, any breach would soon be patched by a man in gleaming armor and a deadly blade. The Parshendi had to bring him and Adolin down first. They knew it, Dalinar knew it, Adolin knew it. Stories spoke of battlefields where the shardbearers were the last ones standing, pulled down by their enemies after long heroic fights. Completely unrealistic. If you killed the Shardbearers first, you could take their blades and turn them against the enemy. He swung again, muscles lagging with fatigue. Dying first. It was a good place to be. Ask nothing of them you wouldn't do yourself. Dalinar stumbled on the rocks, his shardplate feeling as heavy as regular armor. He could be satisfied with the way he'd handled his own life. But his men... he had failed them. Thinking of the way he had stupidly led them into a trap, that sickened him. And then there was Navani. Of all the times to finally begin courting her, Dalinar thought. 6 years wasted. A lifetime wasted. And now she'll have to grieve again. That thought made him raise his arms and steady his feet on the stone. He fought off the Parshendi, struggling on. For her. He would not let himself fall while he still had strength. Nearby, Adolin's armor leaked as well. The youth was extending himself more and more to protect his father. There had been no discussion of trying, perhaps, to leap the chasms and flee. With chasms so wide, the chances were slim. But beyond that, they would not abandon their men to die. He and Adolin had lived by the codes. They would die by the codes. Dalinar swung again, staying at Adolin's side, fighting in that just-out-of-reach tandem way of two shardbearers. Sweat streamed down his face inside his helm, and he shot a final glance toward the disappearing army. It was just barely visible on the horizon. Dalinar's current position gave him a good view down to the west. Let that man be cursed for. For blood of my fathers. What is that? A small force was moving across the western plateau, running toward the tower. A solitary bridge crew, carrying their bridge. It can't be, Dalinar said, stepping back from the fighting, letting the Cobalt Guard, what was left of them, rush in to defend him. Distrusting his eyes, he pushed his visor up. The rest of Sadeus's army was gone, but this single bridge crew remained. Why?
Adolin,
he bellowed, pointing with his shard blade, a surge of hope flooding his limbs. The young man turned, tracing Dalinar's gesture. Adolin froze.
Impossible, he yelled. What kind of trap is that? A foolish one, if it is a trap. We are already dead. But why would he send one back? What purpose? Does it matter?
They hesitated for a moment amid the battle. Both knew the answer.
Assault formations!
Dalinar screamed, turning back to his troops. Stormfather, there were so few of them left. Less than half of his original 8,000.
Form up!
Adolin called.
Get ready to move! We're going to punch through them, men! Gather everything you've got! We've got one chance!
A slim one, Dalinar thought, pulling his visor down. We'll have to cut through the rest of the Parshendi army. Even if they reached the bottom, they'd probably find the crew dead, their bridge cast into the chasm. The Parshendi archers were already forming up. There were hundreds of them. It would be a slaughter. But it was a hope. A tiny, precious hope. If his army was going to fall, it would do so while trying to seize that hope. Raising his shard blade high, feeling a surge of strength and determination, Dalinar charged forward at the head of his men. For the second time in one day, Kaladin ran toward an armed Parshendi position, shield before him, wearing armor cut from the corpse of a fallen enemy. Perhaps he should have felt revolted at what he'd done in creating his armor, but it was no worse than what the Parshendi had done in killing Dunny, Maps, and that nameless man who had shown Kaladin kindness on his first day as a bridgeman. Kaladin still wore that man's sandals. Us and them, he thought. That was the only way a soldier could think of it. For today, Dalinar Kholin and his men were part of the us. A group of Parshendi had seen the bridgemen approaching and was setting up with bows. Fortunately, it appeared that Dalinar had seen Kaladin's band as well, for the army in blue was beginning to cut its way toward rescue. It wasn't going to work. There were too many Parshendi, and Dalinar's men would be tired. It was another disaster. But for once, Kaladin charged into it with eyes wide open. "This is my choice," he thought, as the Parshendi archers formed up. "It's not some angry god watching me, not some Spren playing tricks, not some twist of fate. It's me. I chose to follow Tien. I chose to charge the Shardbearer and save Amaram. I chose to escape the slave pits. And now I choose to try to rescue these men, though I know I will probably fail." The Parshendi loosed their arrows, and Kaladin felt an exultation. Tiredness evaporated. Fatigue fled. He wasn't fighting for Sadeas. He wasn't working to line someone's pockets. He was fighting to protect. The arrows zipped at him, and he swung his shield in an arc, spraying them away. Others came, shooting this way and that, seeking his flesh. He stayed just ahead of them, leaping as they shot for his thighs, turning as they shot for his shoulders, raising his shield when they shot for his face. It wasn't easy, and more than a few arrows got close to him, scoring his breastplate or shin guards. But none hit. He was doing it. Something was wrong. He spun between two arrows, confused.
"Kaladin,"
Syl said, hovering nearby, back to her smaller form.
"There."
She pointed toward the other staging plateau, the one nearby that Dalinar had used for his assault. A large contingent of Parshendi had jumped across to that plateau and were kneeling down raising bows, pointed not at him, but right at Bridge Four's unshielded flank.
"No!"
Kaladin screamed, stormlight escaping from his mouth in a cloud. He turned and ran back across the rocky plateau toward the bridge crew. Arrows launched at him from behind. One took his backplate square on, but skidded aside. Another hit his helm. He leaped over a rocky rift, dashing with all the speed his stormlight could lend him. The Parshendi at the side were drawing. There were at least 50 of them. He was going to be too late. He was going to...
"Bridge Four,"
he bellowed.
"Side carry right."
They hadn't practiced that maneuver in months, but their training was manifest as they obeyed without question, dropping the bridge to their sides just as the archers released. The flight of arrows hit the bridge's deck, bristling across the wood. Kaladin let out a relieved breath, reaching the bridge team who had slowed to carry the bridge on the side.
"Kaladin,"
Rock said, pointing. Kaladin spun. The archers behind, on the tower, were drawing for a large volley. The bridge crew was exposed. The archers loosed. He yelled again, screaming out, stormlight infusing the air around him as he threw every bit of it he had into his shield. The scream echoed in his ears. The stormlight burst from him, his clothing freezing and cracking. Arrows darkened the sky. Something hit him. An extended impact that tossed him backward into the bridgeman. He hit hard, grunting as the force continued to push upon him. The bridge ground to a halt, the men stopping. All fell still. Kaladin blinked, feeling completely drained. His body hurt, his arms tingled, his back ached. There was a sharp pain in his wrist. He groaned, opening his eyes, stumbling as Rock's hands caught him from behind. A muted thump. The bridge being set down. "Idiots," Kaladin thought. "Don't set it down. Retreat." The bridgemen crowded around him as he slipped to the ground, overwhelmed by having expended too much stormlight. He blinked at what he held before him, attached to his bleeding arm. His shield was covered in arrows. Dozens of them, some splitting the others. The bones crossing the shield's front had shattered. The wood was in splinters. Some of the arrows had gone through and hit his forearm. That was the pain. Over 100 arrows. An entire volley. Pulled into a single shield.
"By the bright caller's rays," Dre said softly. "What was It was like a fountain of light, Moash said, kneeling beside Kaladin. Like the sun itself burst from you, Kaladin. The Parshendi, Kaladin croaked and let go of the shield. The straps were broken, and as he struggled to stand, the shield all but disintegrated, falling to pieces, scattering dozens of broken arrows at his feet. A few remained stuck in his arm, but he ignored the pain, looking across at the Parshendi. The groups of archers on both plateaus froze in stunned postures. The ones in front began to call to one another in a language Kaladin didn't understand.
Neshua Kadal!
They stood up. And then they fled.
What?
Kaladin said.
I don't know, Teft said,
cradling his own wounded arm.
But we're getting you to safety. Blast this arm. Lopan!
The shorter man brought Dabbid, and they ushered Kaladin away to a more secure location at the center of the platform. He held his arm, numb, his exhaustion so deep that he could barely think.
Bridge up, Moash called. We've still got a job to do.
The rest of the bridgemen grimly ran back to their bridge, hoisting it up. On the tower, Dalinar's force was fighting its way through the Parshendi toward the possible safety of the bridge crew.
They must be taking such heavy losses, Kaladin thought numbly.
He stumbled and fell to the ground. Teft and Lopan pulled Kaladin into a sheltered hollow, joining Scar and Dabbid. Scar's foot bandage reddened with seeping blood, the spear he'd been using as a staff resting beside him.
Thought I told him to stay off that foot.
We need spheres, Teft said. Scar?
He asked for them this morning, the lean man said. Gave him everything I had. I think most of the men did the same.
Teft cursed softly, pulling the remaining arrows from Kaladin's arm, then wrapping it with bandages.
Is he going to be all right? Scar asked.
I don't know, Teft said. I don't know anything. Kalek, I'm an idiot. Kaladin, lad, can you hear me?
It's just shock, Kaladin said.
You're looking strange, Goncho, Lopan said nervously. White.
Your skin is ashen, lad, Teft said. It looks like you did something to yourself back there. I don't know, I...
He cursed again, smacking his hand against the stone.
I should have listened, idiot.
They'd laid him on his side, and he could barely see the tower. New groups of Parshendi, ones who hadn't seen Kaladin's display, were making for the chasm, bearing weapons. Bridge Four arrived and set down their bridge. They unstrapped their shields, and hurriedly retrieved spears from the sacks of salvage tied at the bridge's side. Then the men went to their positions, pushing at the sides, preparing to slide the bridge across the gap. The Parshendi teams didn't have bows. They formed up to wait, weapons out. There were easily three times as many as there were bridgemen, and more were coming.
We've got to go help, Scar said to Lopan and Teft.
The other two nodded, and all three, two wounded and one missing an arm, climbed to their feet. Kaladin tried to do likewise, but he fell back down, legs too weak to hold him.
Stay, lad, Teft said, smiling. We'll handle it just fine.
They gathered some spears from a stock Lopan had put in his litter, then hobbled out to join the bridge crew. Even Dabbid joined them. He hadn't spoken since being wounded on that first bridge run so long ago. Kaladin crawled up to the lip of the depression, watching them. Syl landed on the stone beside him.
Storming fools, Kaladin muttered. Shouldn't have followed me. Proud of them anyway.
Kaladin?
Syl said.
Is there anything you can do?
He was so storming tired.
Something to make me stronger?
She shook her head. A short distance ahead, the bridgemen began to push. The bridge's wood scraped loudly as it crossed the rocks, moving out over the chasm toward the waiting Parshendi. They began singing that harsh battle song, the one they did whenever they saw Kaladin in his armor. The Parshendi looked eager,
angry, deadly. They wanted blood. They would cut into the bridgemen and rip them apart, then drop the bridge and their corpses into the void beneath.
It's happening again, Kaladin thought, dazed and overwhelmed.
He found himself curling up, drained and shaken.
I can't get to them. They'll die. Right before me. Tux, dead. Nelda, dead. Goshal, dead. Dalit, Sen, Maps, Dunny. Dead, dead, dead. Tien, dead.
Lying huddled in a hollow in the rock, the sounds of battle ringing in the distance, death surrounding him. In a moment he was there again, on that most horrible of days. Kaladin stumbled through the cursing, screaming, fighting chaos of war, clinging to his spear. He dropped his shield. He needed to find a shield somewhere. Shouldn't he have a shield? It was his third real battle. He'd been in Amaram's army only a few months, but already Hearthstone seemed a world away. He reached a hollow of rock and crouched down, pushing his back to it, breathing in and out, fingers slick on the spear's shaft. He was shaking. He'd never realized how idyllic his life had been. Away from war. Away from death. Away from those screams, the cacophony of metal on metal, metal on wood, metal on flesh. He squeezed his eyes shut, trying to block it out. No, he thought. Open your eyes. Don't let them find you and kill you that easily. He forced his eyes open, then turned and peeked out over the battlefield. It was a complete mess. They fought on a large hillside, thousands of men on either side, intermixing and killing. How could anyone keep track of anything in this insanity? Amaram's army, Kaladin's army, was trying to hold the hilltop. Another army, also Alethi, was trying to take it from them. That was all Kaladin knew. The enemy seemed more numerous than his own army. He'll be safe, Kaladin thought. He will be. But he had trouble convincing himself. Tien's stint as a messenger boy hadn't lasted long. Recruitment was down, he'd been told, and every hand that could hold a spear was needed. Tien and the other older messenger boys had been organized into several squads of deep reserves. Dalar said those wouldn't ever be used. Probably. Unless the army was in serious danger. Did being surrounded atop a steep hill, their lines in chaos, constitute serious danger? Get to the top, he thought, looking up the incline. Amaram's banner still flew up there. Their soldiers must be holding. All Kaladin could see was a churning mess of men in orange and the occasional bit of forest green. Kaladin took off at a run up the side of the hill. He didn't turn as men shouted at him, didn't check to see which side they were from. Patches of grass pulled down in front of him. He stumbled over a few corpses, dashed around a couple of scraggly stumpweight trees, and avoided places where men were fighting. There, he thought, noting a group of spearmen ahead, standing in a line, watching warily. Green. Amaram's colors. Kaladin scrambled up to them, and the soldiers let him pass.
Which squad are you from, soldier?
Said a stocky, light-eyed man with the knots of a low captain.
Dead, sir, Kaladin forced out. All dead. We were in Bright Lord Tashlin's company and—
Bah, the man said, turning to a runner. Third report we've had that Tashlin is down. Somebody warn Amaram. East side is weakening by degrees.
He looked to Kaladin.
You, off to the reserves for reassignment.
Yes, sir, Kaladin said, numb.
He glanced down the way he'd come. The incline was littered with corpses, many of them in green. Even as he watched, a group of three stragglers rushing from the top was intercepted and slaughtered. None of the men at the top moved to help them. Kaladin could have fallen just as easily within yards of safety. He knew that it was probably important, strategically, that these soldiers in the line maintain their positions, but it seemed so heartless. Find Tien, he thought, trotting off toward the reserves field on the north side of the wide hilltop. Here, however, he found only more chaos. Groups of dazed men, bloodied, getting sorted into new squads and sent back out onto the field. Kaladin moved through them, searching for the squad that had been created out of the messenger boys. He found Dalar first. The lanky three-fingered sergeant of the reserves stood beside a tall post bearing a pair of flapping triangular banners. He was assigning newly made squads to fill out losses in the companies fighting below. Kaladin could still hear the yells.
You, Dalar said, pointing at Kaladin.
Squad reassignment is in that direction. Get moving.
I need to find the squad made from messenger boys, Kaladin said.
Why in damnation do you want to know that?
How should I know?
Kaladin said, shrugging, trying to remain calm.
I just follow orders.
Dalar grunted.
Breadlord Sheeler's company, southeast side. You can...
Kaladin was already running. This wasn't supposed to happen. Tien was supposed to stay safe. Stormfather. It hadn't even been 4 months yet.
He made his way to the southeast side of the hill and searched out a banner flapping a quarter of the way down the incline. The stark black glyph pair read Shesh Laryl, Sheeler's company.
Surprised at his own determination, Kaladin brushed past the soldiers guarding the hilltop and found himself on the battlefield again. Things looked better over here. Sheeler's company was holding its ground, although assaulted by a wave of enemies. Kaladin dashed down the incline, skidding in places, sliding on blood. His fear had vanished. It had been replaced by worry for his brother. He arrived at the company line just as enemy squads were assaulting. He tried to scramble further behind the lines to search for Tien, but he was caught in the wave of attacks. He stumbled to the side, joining a squad of spearmen. The enemy was on them in a second. Kaladin held his spear in two hands, standing at the edge of the other spearmen and trying not to get in their way. He didn't really know what he was doing. He'd barely knew enough to use his shield mate for protection. The exchange happened quickly, and Kaladin made only a single thrust. The enemy was rebuffed, and he managed to avoid taking a wound. He stood, panting, gripping his spear.
You,
an authoritative voice said. A man was pointing at Kaladin, knots on his shoulders. The squad leader.
About time my team got some of those reinforcements. For a time there I thought Varth was going to get every man. Where's your shield?
Kaladin scrambled to grab one off a fallen soldier nearby. As he was working, the squad leader swore behind him.
Damnation. They're coming again. Two prongs this time. We can't hold like this.
A man in a green messenger's vest scrambled over a nearby rock formation.
Hold against the east assault, Mesh.
What about that wave to the south?
The squad leader, Mesh, bellowed.
It's handled for now. Hold east. Those are your orders.
The messenger scrambled on, delivering a similar message to the next squad in line.
Varth, your squad is to hold east.
Kaladin got up with his shield. He needed to go find Tien. He couldn't... He stumbled to a stop. There, in the next squad down the line, stood three figures. Younger boys, looking small in their armor and holding their spears uncertainly. One was Tien. His team of reserves had obviously been split apart to fill holes in other squads.
Tien!
Kaladin screamed, falling out of line as the enemy troops came upon them.
Why were Tien and the other two positioned in the middle front of the squad formation? They barely knew how to hold a spear.
Mesh yelled for Kaladin, but Kaladin ignored him. The enemy was upon them in a moment, and Mesh's squad broke, losing their discipline and turning to a more frenzied, unorganized resistance. Kaladin felt something, like a thump against his leg. He stumbled, hitting the ground, and realized with a shock that he'd been stabbed with a spear. He felt no pain. Odd.
Tien,
he thought, forcing himself up. Someone loomed over him, and Kaladin reacted immediately, rolling as a spear came down for his heart. His own spear was back in his hands before he realized he'd grabbed it, and he whipped it upward. Then he froze. He'd just driven his spear through the enemy soldier's neck. It had happened so quickly.
I just killed a man.
He rolled over, letting the enemy drop to his knees as Kaladin yanked his spear free. Barth's squad was back a little farther. The enemy hit it a little bit after attacking where Kaladin had been. Tien and the other two were still in the front.
Tien!
Kaladin yelled. The boy looked toward him, eyes opening wide. He actually smiled. Behind him, the rest of the squad pulled back, leaving the three untrained boys exposed. And, sensing weakness, the enemy soldiers descended on Tien and the others. There was an armored light eyes at their front and gleaming steel. He swung a sword. Kaladin's brother fell just like that. One eye blink and he was standing there looking terrified. The next he was on the ground.
No!
Kaladin screamed. He tried to get to his feet, but slipped to his knees. His leg didn't work right. Barth's squad hurried forward, attacking the enemies, who had been distracted with Tien and the other two. They'd placed the untrained at the front to stop the momentum of the enemy attack.
No, no, no!
Kaladin screamed. He used his spear to hoist himself to his feet, then stumbled forward. It couldn't be what he thought. It couldn't be over that quickly. It was a miracle that nobody struck Kaladin down as he stumbled the rest of the distance. He barely thought on it. He just watched where Tien had fallen. There was thunder. No, hooves. Amaram had arrived with his cavalry, and they were sweeping through the enemy lines. Kaladin didn't care. He finally reached the spot. There he found three corpses, young, small, lying in a small hollow in the stone. Horrified, numb, Kaladin put forward his hand and rolled over the one that was face down. Tien's dead eyes stared upward. Kaladin continued to kneel beside the body. He should have bound his wound, should have moved back to safety, but he was too numb. He just knelt.
About time he rode down here, a voice said.
Kaladin looked up, noting a group of spearmen gathering nearby, watching the cavalry.
He wanted them to bunch up against us,
one of the spearmen said. He had knots on the shoulders. Barth, their squad leader. Such keen eyes the man had. Not a brutish lout. Lean. Thoughtful.
I should feel anger, Kaladin thought. I should feel something.
Barth looked down at him, then at the bodies of the three dead messenger boys.
You bastard, Kaladin hissed. You put them in front.
You work with what you have, Barth said, nodding to his team, then pointing at a fortified position. If they give you men who can't fight, I'll find another use for them.
He hesitated as his team marched away. He seemed regretful.
Gotta do what you can to stay alive, son. Turn a liability into an advantage whenever you can. Remember that, if you live.
With that, he jogged off. Kaladin looked down.
Why couldn't I protect him?
He thought, looking at Tien, remembering his brother's laugh. His innocence, his smile, his excitement at exploring the hills outside Hearthstone.
Please, please let me protect him. Make me strong enough.
He felt so weak. Blood loss. He found himself slumping to the side, and with tired hands he tied off his wound. And then, feeling terribly vacant inside, he lay down beside Tien and pulled the body close.
Don't worry,
Kaladin whispered. When had he started to cry?
I'll bring you home. I'll protect you, Tien. I'll bring you back.
He held the body into the evening, long past the end of the battle, clinging to it as it slowly grew cold. Kaladin blinked. He wasn't in that hollow with Tien. He was on the plateau. He could hear men dying in the distance. He hated thinking of that day. He almost wished he'd never gone looking for Tien. Then he wouldn't have had to watch, wouldn't have had to kneel there, powerless as his brother was slaughtered. It was happening again. Rock, Moash, Teft. They were all going to die. And here he lay, powerless again. He could barely move. He felt so drained.
Kaladin?
A voice whispered. He blinked. Syl was hovering in front of him.
Do you know the words?
All I wanted to do was protect them,
he whispered.
That's why I've come. The words, Kaladin.
They're going to die. I can't save them. I...
Amaram slaughtered his men in front of him. A nameless shardbearer killed Dalet. A Light Eyes killed Tien. No. Kaladin rolled over and forced himself to his feet, wavering on weak legs. No. Bridge 4 hadn't set its bridge yet. That surprised him. They were still pushing it across the chasm. The Parshendi crowding up on the other side, eager, their song becoming more frantic. His delusions had seemed like hours, but had passed in just a few heartbeats.
No!
Lopin's litter was in front of Kaladin. A spear rested amid the drained water bottles and ragged bandages, steel head reflecting sunlight. It whispered to him. It terrified him, and he loved it.
When the time comes, I hope you're ready, because this lot will need you.
He seized the spear, the first real weapon he had held since his display in the chasm so many months ago. Then he started to run. Slowly at first, picking up speed. Reckless, his body exhausted. But he did not stop. He pushed forward, harder, charging toward the bridge. It was only halfway across the chasm. Syl shot out in front of him, looking back, worried.
The words, Kaladin.
Rock cried out as Kaladin ran onto the bridge as it was moving. The wood wobbled beneath him. It was out over the chasm, but hadn't reached the other side.
Kaladin!
Teft yelled.
What are you doing?
Kaladin screamed, reaching the end of the bridge. Finding a tiny surge of strength somewhere, he raised his spear and threw himself off the end of the wooden platform, launching himself into the air above the cavernous void. Bridgman cried out in dismay. Syl zipped about him with worry. Parshendi looked up with amazement as a lone bridgeman sailed through the air toward them. His drained, worn-out body barely had any strength left. In that moment of crystallized time, he looked down on his enemies. Parshendi with their marbled red and black skin. Soldiers raising finely crafted weapons as if to cut him from the sky. Strangers, oddities in carapace breastplates and skullcaps. Many of them wearing beards. Beards woven with glowing gemstones. Kaladin breathed in. Like the power of salvation itself, like rays of sunlight from the eyes of the Almighty, stormlight exploded from those gemstones. It streamed through the air, pulled invisible streams like glowing columns of luminescent smoke, twisting and turning and spiraling like tiny funnel clouds until they slammed into him. And the storm came to life again. Kaladin hit the rocky ledge, legs suddenly strong, mind, body, and blood alive with energy. He fell into a crouch, spear under his arm, a small ring of stormlight expanding from him in a wave, pushed down to the stones by his fall. Stunned, the Parshendi shied away, eyes widening, song faltering. A trickle of stormlight closed the wounds on his arm. He smiled, spear held before him. It was as familiar as the body of a lover long lost.
The words,
a voice said, urgent, as if directly into his mind. In that moment, Kaladin was amazed to realize that he knew them, though they'd never been told to him.
I will protect those who cannot protect themselves, he whispered.
The second ideal of the Knights Radiant. A crack shook the air, like an enormous clap of thunder, though the sky was completely clear. Teft stumbled back, having just set the bridge in place, and found himself gaping with the rest of Bridge 4. Kaladin exploded with energy. A burst of whiteness washed out of him, a wave of white smoke. Stormlight. The force of it slammed into the first rank of Parshendi, tossing them backward, and Teft had to hold his hand up against the vibrancy of the light.
"Something just changed," Moash whispered, hand up. "Something important."
Kaladin raised his spear. The powerful light began to subside, retreating. A more subdued glow began to steam off his body. Radiant, like smoke from an ethereal fire. Nearby, some of the Parshendi fled, though others stepped up, raising weapons in challenge. Kaladin spun into them, a living form of steel, wood, and determination. Eshanai.
They named it the final desolation, but they lied. Our gods lied. Oh, how they lied. The Everstorm comes. I hear its whispers. See its storm wall. Know its heart.
Tanatahis, 1173. 8 seconds pre-death. An Azish itinerant worker. Sample of particular note. Soldiers in blue yelled, screaming war cries to encourage themselves. The sounds were like a roaring avalanche behind Adolin as he swung his blade in wild swings. There was no room for a proper stance. He had to keep moving, punching through the Parshendi, leading his men toward the western chasm. His father's horse and his own were still safe, carrying some wounded through the back ranks. The Shardbearers didn't dare mount, though. In these close quarters, the Rashadian would be chopped down and their riders dropped. This was the type of battlefield maneuver that would have been impossible without Shardbearers. A rush against superior numbers, made by wounded, exhausted men? They should have been stopped cold and crushed. But Shardbearers could not be stopped so easily. Their armor leaking stormlight, their 6-foot blades flashing in wide swaths, Adolin and Dalinar shattered the Parshendi defenses, creating an opening, a rift. Their men, the best trained in the Alethi war camps, knew how to use it. They formed a wedge behind their Shardbearers, prying the Parshendi armies open, using spearmen formations to cut through and keep going forward. Adolin moved at almost a jog. The incline of the hill worked in their favor, giving them better footing, letting them rumble down the slope like charging chulls. The chance to survive when all had been thought lost gave the men a surge of energy for one last dash toward freedom. They took enormous casualties. Already Dalinar's force had lost another 1,000 of his 4, probably more. But it didn't matter. The Parshendi fought to kill. But the Alethi, this time, fought to live.
"Living heralds above," Teft thought, watching Kaladin fight.
Just moments ago, the lad had looked near death, skin a dull gray, hands shaking. Now he was a shining whirlwind, a storm wielding a spear. Teft had known many a battlefield, but he had never seen anything remotely like this. Kaladin held the ground before the bridge by himself. White stormlight streamed from him like a blazing fire. His speed was incredible, nearly inhuman. And his precision? Each thrust of the spear hit a neck, side, or other unarmored target of Parshendi flesh. It was more than the stormlight. Teft had only fragmentary recollections of the things his family had tried to teach him, but those memories all agreed. Stormlight did not grant skill. It could not make a man into something he was not. It enhanced, it strengthened, it invigorated. It perfected. Kaladin ducked low, slamming the butt against the leg of a Parshendi, dropping him to the ground, and came up to block an axe swing by catching the haft with that of his spear. He let go with one hand, sweeping the tip of the spear up under the arm of the Parshendi and ramming it into his armpit. As that Parshendi fell, Kaladin pulled his spear free and slammed the end into a Parshendi head that had gotten too close. The butt of the spear shattered with a spray of wood, and the Parshendi's carapace helm exploded. No. This wasn't just stormlight. This was a master of the spear with his capacity enhanced to astonishing levels. The bridgeman gathered around Teft, amazed. His wounded arm didn't seem to hurt as much as it should.
He's like a part of the wind itself, Dre said. Pulled down and given life. Not a man at all. A spren.
Sigzel? Scar asked, eyes wide. You ever seen anything like this?
The dark-skinned man shook his head.
Stormfather, Pete whispered. What is he?
He's our bridge leader, Teft said, snapping out of his reverie.
On the other side of the chasm, Kaladin barely dodged a blow from a Parshendi mace.
And he needs our help. First and second teams, you take the left side. Don't let the Parshendi get around him. Third and fourth teams, you're with me on the right. Rock and Lopin, you'll be ready to pull back any wounded. The rest of you, wrinkled wall formation. Don't attack. Just stay alive and keep them back. And Lopin, toss him a spear that isn't broken.
Dalinar roared, striking down a group of Parshendi swordsmen. He charged over their bodies, running up a short incline and throwing himself in a leap, dropping several feet into the Parshendi below, sweeping out with his blade. His armor was an enormous weight upon his back, but the energy of his struggle kept him going. The Cobalt Guard, the straggling members who were left, roared and leaped off the incline behind him. They were doomed. Those bridgemen would be dead by now. But Dalinar blessed them for their sacrifice. It might have been meaningless as an end, but it had changed the journey. This was how his soldiers should fall. Not cornered and frightened, but fighting with passion. He would not slide quietly into the dark. No, indeed. He shouted his defiance again as he smashed into a group of Parshendi, whirling and hauling his shard blade in a circling sweep. He stumbled through the patch of dead Parshendi, their eyes burning as they fell. And Dalinar burst out onto open stone. He blinked, stunned.
We did it, he thought in disbelief. We cut all the way through.
Behind him, soldiers roared, their tired voices sounding nearly as amazed as he felt. Just ahead of him, a final group of Parshendi lay between Dalinar and the chasm, but their backs were turned to him.
Why were they?
The bridgemen. The bridgemen were fighting. Dalinar gaped, lowering Oathbringer with numb arms. That little force of bridgemen held the bridgehead, fighting desperately against the Parshendi who were trying to force them back. It was the most amazing, most glorious thing Dalinar had ever seen. Adolin let out a whoop, breaking through the Parshendi to Dalinar's left. The younger man's armor was scratched, cracked, and scored, and his helm had shattered, leaving his head dangerously exposed. But his face was exultant.
Go! Go! Dalinar bellowed, pointing. Give them support, Stormit! If those bridgemen fall, we're all dead!
Adolin and the Cobalt Guard dashed forward. Gallant and Sureblood, Adolin's Rashadium, galloped past, carrying three wounded each. Dalinar hated to leave so many wounded on the slopes, but the codes were clear. In this case, protecting the men he could save was more important. Dalinar turned to strike at the main body of Parshendi to his left, making certain the corridor remained open for his troops. Many of the soldiers scrambled toward safety, though several squads proved their mettle by forming up at the sides to keep fighting, opening the gap wider. Sweat had soaked through the brow rag attached to Dalinar's helm, and drops of it fell, overwhelming his eyebrows and falling into his left eye. He cursed, reaching to open his visor, then froze. The enemy troops were parting. There, standing among them, was a 7-foot-tall giant of a Parshendi in gleaming silver shard plate. It fit as only plate could, having molded to his large stature. His shard blade was wicked and barbed, like flames frozen into metal. He raised it to Dalinar in salute.
Now, Dalinar bellowed incredulously. Now you come?
The shardbearer stepped forward, steel boots clanking on stone. The other Parshendi backed away.
Why not earlier?
Dalinar demanded, hurriedly setting himself into wind stance, blinking his left eye against the sweat. He stood near the shadow of a large, oblong rock formation, shaped like a book on its side.
Why wait out the entire battle only to attack now, when...
When Dalinar was about to get away. Apparently the Parshendi Shardbearer had been willing to let his fellows throw themselves at Dalinar when it seemed obvious he would fall. Perhaps they let the regular soldiers try to win shards, as was done in human armies. Now that Dalinar might escape, the potential loss of a plate and blade was too great, and so the Shardbearer had been sent to fight him. The Shardbearer stepped up, speaking in the thick Parshendi language. Dalinar didn't understand a word of it. He raised his blade and fell into stance. The Parshendi said something further, then grunted and stepped forward, swinging. Dalinar cursed to himself, still blinded in his left eye. He dodged back, swinging his blade and slapping the enemy's weapon. The parry shook Dalinar inside his armor. His muscles responded sluggishly. Stormlight still leaked from cracks in his armor, but it was abating. It wouldn't be much longer before the plate stopped responding. The Parshendi Shardbearer attacked again. His stance was unfamiliar to Dalinar, but there was something practiced about it. This wasn't a savage playing with a powerful weapon. He was a trained Shardbearer. Dalinar was once again forced to parry, something Windstance wasn't intended to do. His weight-laden muscles were too sluggish to dodge, and his plate was too cracked to risk himself getting hit. The blow nearly threw him out of stance. He clenched his teeth, throwing weight behind his weapon, and intentionally overcorrecting as the Parshendi's next blow came. The blades met with a furious clang, throwing off a shower of sparks like a bucket of molten metal dashed into the air. Dalinar recovered quickly and threw himself forward, trying to slam his shoulder into his enemy's chest. The Parshendi was still full of power, however, his plate uncracked. He got out of the way and quite nearly hit Dalinar on the back. Dalinar twisted just in time. Then he turned and leaped onto a small rock formation, then stepped to a higher ledge and managed to reach the top. The Parshendi followed as Dalinar had hoped. The precarious footing raised the stakes, which was just fine with him. A single blow could ruin Dalinar. That meant taking risks.